Most of you drive a car. In order to drive a car, you need to get a driver's license, right? You're going to drive around and the cop is going to stop you. You want to be sure you have a driver's license on you. What's the second thing you have to have? Liability insurance, right? If a cop stops you, those are the two things he's going to ask for. Proof of insurance and your driver's license. Now, what if you were to say, you know, I really think liability insurance is a great idea. I respect the heck out of the lawmakers who put that into the law. I mean, it's outstanding. Those guys, really way to look out for everybody. And I have nothing but praise for the whole concept of having insurance. It's just not for me. Right? That works for you. That's your truth. Live it. But it's just, I have no problem with anybody else wanting it, but it's just not for me. That'll work until the cop pulls you over, right? And then all of a sudden, your personal interest in staying out of the whole mess will come to a head. Because there's some things we have to actually weigh in on one way or another. And just saying, I think it's great, but count me out, is already a way of making a decision. That's kind of what happens with Jesus. And I've chosen the passage I want us to look at today because it's an account in this final moment of Jesus' life where we see an individual have this encounter face to face with Jesus, and he has to do something about it, even though he really doesn't want to. And the reason we make such a big deal about Jesus and his resurrection, his death and resurrection, is that is the moment that sealed him as God's promised Messiah and that demonstrated to the cosmos that he is the Savior of the world, that he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And the question then becomes, what am I going to do with him? So we're going to look at that. And I've titled the message today, You Choose. We're in John chapter 18. We'll begin in verse 28 and go through 19, verse 22. So let's start reading it right away. Then they're leading Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. It was dawn, and they did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If this one were not doing evil, we would not have handed him over to you." So Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." The Jews said to him, "It is not allowed for us to put anyone to death." I am sorry, I'm having a bit of a technical issue. Sorry. That Jesus' word might be fulfilled, which he spoke, indicating what kind of death he was about to die. This whole exchange, you can probably tell from the outset that there's no love lost between Pilate and the religious leaders who bring Jesus before him. Pilate was the Roman procurator. The sons of Herod had been so disastrous in managing the territory around Jerusalem that Rome said, "We need to send somebody that's a Roman there to manage this." And Pilate was the one they had running things in Judea at this time. And he never bothered to learn Jewish customs or Jewish religion, and seemed to go out of his way sometimes to bug the Jewish religious leaders. You can tell right off here that they're not on best terms, because we read earlier in the gospel that when they arrested Jesus, they were accompanied with a Roman cohort, which could only have happened if Pilate had authorized the use of Roman soldiers to assist in the arrest of Jesus. So when they show up with Jesus under arrest, and he comes out and says, What's the problem with this guy? He's already kind of irritating them because they've already talked about this. They know what's going on, and you can sense the defensive nature of the people bringing the accusations. If he weren't doing evil, we wouldn't have handed him over to you. His response is, you guys take him. I don't want to mess with this. You deal with all of this. This is happening at the break of dawn, by the way. Roman officials like to do their business really early in the morning so that by 10 a.m. they were done and they could have the rest of the day to themselves. So this happens very early in the morning. And he's saying, you guys judge him. And they say, no, you won't allow us to put anyone to death. Now, that's not quite true. We'll see a little bit later how Stephen is put to death by the Jewish people. He is stoned to death. But they don't want to just kill Jesus. They want it to be the most humiliating and excruciating form of capital punishment available. They want him crucified. And they know that the Romans will not let them do that. So they say, it's not allowed for us to put anyone to death. And John, as he's writing his gospel, gives this commentary there, that Jesus' word might be fulfilled, which he spoke, indicating what kind of death he was about to die. Because Jesus had already told his disciples that he was going to be lifted up and that he would draw all people to himself. So we continue in verse 33. So Pilate entered the praetorium again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Now in the other three gospel accounts, we have a very shortened version of this, and Jesus immediately, his response is, you say so. Now he says that eventually, but there are more parts of the dialogue before we get to that part. And John gives us a much broader account of this conversation than we find in the other Gospels. So the opening question is, are you the king of the Jews? Are you an insurrectionist? Are you trying to mobilize people against Rome? Are you some kind of unauthorized king of the Jews that the Romans have not put in place? I love Jesus' answer. Verse 34, Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord? Or did others talk to you about me? You'll find this if you read the gospel accounts, that Jesus, when he encountered people and they would come and ask him a question, oftentimes what Jesus answered was not what they were asking, but what they needed to consider. He gave them the answer they needed, but oftentimes it was not what they were asking. There's the example of the woman by the well in Samaria, where when Jesus asked her for water, her first question is, how is it that you, being a Jew, are speaking to me, a Samaritan woman? Because Jews and Samaritans did not even speak to each other. And Jesus' response was, if you only knew who it is that just asked you for water, you would ask him and he would give you living water. This is the same kind of thing. Pilate wants to just rush past this, emit some kind of judgment in this case. So he says, here are the facts of the case. Are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus, rather than answer the question, says, wait a minute. Are you the one who wants to know this? Or are you just repeating what somebody else told you? And from the very beginning of Jesus' encounter with Pilate, Jesus forces Pilate to stop a moment and think, not what is everybody around me saying I need to do with Jesus, not as what is everybody around me saying, telling me about Jesus, but now that I am face to face with him myself, what am I going to do with Jesus? I want to suggest to you, That's the situation of every one of us. That sooner or later we come face to face with Jesus, and it falls to us to stop a moment and say, okay, forget for a moment what everybody else has been saying about him. Forget for a moment what I think I'm doing. What is my connection to him? What am I going to make of Jesus? And it's interesting. Pilate thinks Jesus is the one on trial. What he doesn't realize yet is that he has just been granted an audience with the most important person he's ever going to stand face to face with. Pilate is given a one-on-one audience with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. God Almighty come to us in the flesh. And Jesus asks him to stop and consider for a moment. This is your chance to make something of who I am for yourself. Forget what everybody else has been telling you about me. You've got me right in front of you now. What are you going to do with me? I want to challenge you to think of Jesus for yourself. Don't think about Jesus, what have other people told me? Don't think about Jesus, what did I read on the internet or what YouTube did I watch where somebody was spouting stuff about him? But what am I going to make of Jesus? Pilate answered, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you over to me. What have you done? Pilate tries to avoid what Jesus is trying to ask him to do, which is confront who Jesus is for himself. And the way he tries to excuse himself from the whole consideration is by saying, I'm not a Jew. And that might be where you are. You might say, I'm not a Christian. I wasn't raised a Christian. I grew up in a completely different country, a different background. My parents were Hindu, or my parents were Muslim, my parents were this or that, or whatever, and this question is not for me. That's what Pilate tries to do, and so often we try to avoid dealing with Jesus ourselves, and we're content to simply assimilate what somebody else tells us about him, and move on and try to ignore him. By saying, no, that's not my responsibility. My parents didn't raise me in the Christian faith, so I don't have to do anything with Jesus. Now, Pilate is wrong. We all have to do something with Jesus. Doesn't matter what our starting point is. If you are hearing about him today, God is asking you to come to a decision today yourself about this Jesus you've heard so much about. And don't give him the excuse that that's not your background. But he tries to steer it back. What have you done? And now Jesus answers his first question. Are you the King of the Jews? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my officers would have been fighting so that I would not be delivered over to the Jews. So now my kingdom is not from here. To the question, are you the King of the Jews? Jesus basically says, I'm king, but I'm king of much more than just the Jews. I'm king of a kingdom that transcends this world. I'm king of a kingdom that goes beyond this whole planet, this whole solar system, this whole galaxy. When we're talking of my kingdom, we're talking about something much bigger than you have ever contemplated, Pilate. Now, if my kingdom were about establishing some kind of a government down here and taking on the forces of Rome and building some kind of a nation here, then my followers would be fighting to keep you from doing anything to me. But they're not doing anything because my kingdom is on a whole other order of things. Pilate said to him, so you are a king. And here we get to the part that the other gospels mention. Jesus answered, you say that I am king. But that's not all he says. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, that I may bear witness to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth heeds my voice. Have you ever found it a sad thing about this world that there are so many lies? That there are so many things you just cannot believe because people are constantly lying and deceiving and twisting around the truth to some hidden agenda of their own, and to the point where we have to be skeptical about just about everything. Aren't you ever sick of it? And the fact that even with ourselves sometimes we have a hard time even learning to be truthful with our own selves. We're so bad about lies, we even lie to ourselves, not just others. Jesus says, I came into this world. I was born into this world so that I could be a witness to the truth. And here's another thing he said. This truth is available to anybody. Everyone who belongs to the truth heeds my voice, listens to, attends to my voice. So again, it doesn't matter where you started out in life. It doesn't matter what your background might be. If you are interested in coming to the truth, then you will come to Jesus. Everyone who belongs to the truth will heed his voice, will follow him. And this is very sad, Pilate's response. Pilate says to him, truth, what is that? It seems to Pilate that what Jesus is talking about is a pipe dream. This is a politician, a man who's caught up in the cogs and wheels of the Roman Empire. And that whole world system is all about manipulating the truth and seeking power and doing whatever you have to do to hold on to it. And in his world, he thinks there is no such thing as truth. That's a pipe dream. That's a fantasy. There's no such thing. You can choose to convince yourself of that. The fact remains that Jesus came into this world to make possible for us to know the truth. Not just some truth, but the transcendent truth of reality itself, the truth that is rooted in the God who shaped everything that even exists. And all that falls to us is to heed his voice, to come to him, listen to him. Having said this, he went out again to the Jews and he tells them, I find no ground for an accusation against him. But it is a custom with you that I should release to you one prisoner at the Passover. Do you want then for me to release to you the king of the Jews? Pilate comes out and says, okay, I recognize clearly this guy is not an insurrectionist. None of his followers have taken up arms to prevent his arrest. He is not promoting any kind of political upheaval here. He talks about a superior kingdom, but he says it's not of this world, so that should be no threat to Caesar. He goes out and says, there's no problem with this man. And he says, here, let me give you a graceful way for this to happen. Every Passover, we have this habit of releasing a prisoner for you. So why don't I release Jesus, and then you religious leaders can look like the good guys who released yet another prisoner from the oppressive Romans. You have to wonder why Pilate thought that would work, given that they had just spent all night trying to build a case to have Jesus crucified. They don't want Jesus free. But he tries to do that, and they shouted again, saying, not this one, but Barabbas. Now, Barabbas, John tells us, was an insurrectionist. Now, there's so much irony in this. Barabbas, that name means son of the father. And throughout the Gospel of John, Jesus has been saying over and over that he is the only son of God the Father. He is the true Son of the Father. But the religious leaders don't want the true Son of the Father. They want this other guy who has the name Son of the Father. And whereas Jesus is actually not a political militant, he is not an insurrectionist, this guy literally is. This Barabbas guy has been arrested for insurrection. But that's the one they ask him to release. Pilate then decides, let me try it a different way. He knows that the Jews hate the Romans, that they're an occupying force, and that oftentimes they treat with brutality, senseless brutality, the people that they are governing to try to make examples. And he says, okay, well, maybe if I mistreat Jesus, then I'll be the bad guy and they will feel sympathy for Jesus. So Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged severely. In the Greek, there are three terms you can use to describe a flogging, each one of them more severe than the previous. And the word used here is the one for the most severe form of flogging that the Romans, and from ancient accounts, people would often die from this kind of flogging, exposed bone, entrails. It was just a horrendous level of flogging. But that's what he has done to Jesus. And the soldiers, weaving a crown of thorns, placed it on his head and put a purple robe on him, purple being the color that reflected nobility. And they were coming up to him and saying, "Hail, the King of the Jews," and they were slapping him. And Pilate came outside again and tells them, "See, I am bringing him out to you so that you may know that I do not find a single ground for accusation against him." Now, what is Pilate doing here? He is humiliating this figure that represents Jewish messianic hopes. They had been expecting God to send a king, and this Jesus is mocked and ridiculed as some parody of a king, and he is severely beaten, and then he drags him out humiliated like this and says, "I find absolutely no grounds for any accusation against this man." And Pilate is trying to say, "Guys, get angry with me. I'm the oppressive Roman taking an innocent man and horrendously abusing my power. So feel sympathy for Jesus. He is the victim of Roman oppression, and let him go." It's an interesting attempt to get Jesus released, but it doesn't work. Then Jesus came outside wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and he tells them, "Behold the man." So when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out saying, "Crucify! Crucify!" Pilate tells them, "You take him and crucify, for I find in him no ground for accusation." Even at this point, Pilate is unwilling to crucify Jesus. The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to the law, he ought to die because he made himself Son of God." All of a sudden, they changed the accusation. He's no longer an insurrectionist. He's committed blasphemy. He has claimed to be divine, which for Pilate isn't such a big deal. All kinds of people in the ancient world claimed to be divine. So when Pilate heard this word, he feared even more. Here's what Pilate's afraid of. This guy said, I'm not the kind of king you're worried about, but if he said, "I'm the Son of God," I think it might be true. There's something about standing in front of this man who should have been terrified of him and of what he could do to him, and the power and the authority and the presence that exuded from this man had Pilate convinced this is not just some guy. And when he heard about him saying, "I'm the Son of God," he was terrified. And he went into the praetorium again and says to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate says to him, "You won't speak to me? Don't you know that I have authority to release you and I have authority to crucify you?" Jesus replied, "You would have no authority at all over me if it had not been given to you from above. That is why the one handing me over to you has a greater sin." Now, Jesus is not saying that Pilate is not responsible for what decision he's about to make. But he's saying, "The people that handed me over to you know all the holy scriptures that God has revealed, and they know that God has promised to send a Messiah who will be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace, who will restore creation itself. and make all things right. They knew it, and they knew Jesus was that person, and they wanted to kill him to keep things in their power. So he says, their fault is greater than yours, but that doesn't mean that what Pilate is about to do is meaningless. But Jesus says, you couldn't do anything to me if a superior power had not enabled you and allowed you to make that choice. You may not realize this, but we are not omnipotent. We are finite beings with a limited range of choices to make in this life. And that range of choices set before us is not, in large measure, something we control personally. It is something God has laid out in front of us. And there is an authority from above that determines whether you get to be in a position of power to make a decision. Pilate could have had a heart attack the day before. He could have had an aneurysm. He could have died for any number of reasons that he had no control over the day before this. But he was where he was, when he was, given the choice to make that he was given because God Almighty so determined it. And Jesus said, you wouldn't have any authority if it hadn't been granted you from above. From then on, Pilate was trying to release him. But the Jews cried out saying, and this is it, this is where they get him. If you release this one, you are no friend of the Caesar. That was a semi-official title. People who were within the circle of the Caesar's favor were described as friends of Caesar. Every person who makes himself king speaks against the Caesar. Let me tell you a little bit about Pontius Pilate's political situation. A lot of scholars think that the crucifixion likely happened in AD 33, the year 33. Pilate was not of high rank. He started out as an equestrian. So it was a little bit odd that he was in such a high position as being a procurator in Judea. And the way he had made his way into that position was that he was very close to a powerful figure in Rome by the name of Sejanus. And Sejanus was very close to Emperor Tiberius. But you know what? When Emperor Tiberius was getting older, he got paranoid, to the point that he ended up moving to an island and living on an island because he was afraid everybody was out to get him. And in AD 31, Tiberius became so distrustful of Sejanus that he had him deposed. Now, Sejanus was the guy that got Pontius into power. And if now Sejanus, it's been a couple of years since the emperor got rid of Sejanus, Pontius Pilate is left with nobody arguing his case in Rome. So when they say to him, we're going to send word to Rome that we brought an insurrectionist to you, somebody claiming to be king that the Caesar had not approved, and this is going to be the end of your political career. That was a very real threat. And the Jews had connections in Rome. In the history leading up to all this, there are Jews who've been connected to the Caesar's household and been involved in things in Rome. So this isn't an empty threat. So Pilate, even though he desperately wants to release Jesus, has to decide, will I put my whole political career on the line for Jesus? Or will I kill this man who I know is innocent and who I suspect is the Son of God to protect the life I've built? So Pilate, once he heard these words, brought Jesus outside and sat down on the judgment seat in the place called Stone Pavement, Gabbatha in Aramaic. Now, it was the preparation for the Passover. It was about noon, and he tells the Jews, behold, your king. Then they shouted, "Out with that one! Out! Crucify him!" Pilate says to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he handed him over to them so that he might be crucified. So they took Jesus, and bearing his own cross, he went out to the place that called the place of the skull, which is called Golgotha in Aramaic, where they crucified him, and with him two others on this side and that, with Jesus between. Now Pilate also inscribed a title and put it on the cross. Here is what was written: "Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews." Therefore many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Aramaic, in Latin, in Greek. Then the chief priests of the Jews were saying to Pilate, "Don't write 'the King of the Jews,' but that 'this one said, I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." You might find yourself this morning in Pilate's shoes. You really don't want to make any decision about Jesus. You don't want to talk trash about him. You don't want to diss him. You don't want to say anything mean about Jesus. You're willing to admit he was a great man, and he lived an exemplary life, and his teachings were powerful and good, and you can say all the flowery and good things you want to say about him, but ultimately, you're going to have to make the choice Pilate made. Forget what everybody else has said. What are you going to do with Jesus? And it really boils down to the choice Pilate had to make. Am I going to hold on to what I have? Am I going to hold on to the life that I have built for myself on my own? Or am I going to claim Jesus not just as king, but as my king? Am I going to put everything I've built aside and let Jesus be king of my life? That's what he asks of us. Jesus demands everything. He even said, if anyone comes to me and doesn't deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me, he cannot be my disciple. Anyone who loves father or mother or brother or sister or son or daughter more than me is not worthy to be my disciple, and we must love him even more than our own lives. He demands it all. You say, "Wow, that's too much." Well, let me tell you what he offers in exchange. He asks for all you have so that he can give you all he has. That's the way he gives not only forgiveness of sins, but restored communion with God by the Holy Spirit, who comes to dwell in your heart and begins the process of refashioning you from the soul outward. A transformation that begins in the very core of who you are. That's what Jesus wants to do, if you will give it up and surrender it to him. And that's what Jesus is asking of us this morning. If we will heed his voice, if we will surrender our lives to him, he will lead us into truth. He will be our King of glory. We're going to sing a song of invitation, and I have not arranged ahead of time, but let me ask, would the Skaggs, could you help me with the invitation, and the Andersons? Let me see, is Stephanie available? Yeah, let me ask you, what we like to do when we hear from the Word of God, we believe it is meant to be a conversation. When God speaks to us, he wants us to say something back. And I want to ask you this morning, what are you going to say back to Jesus? How are you going to respond to his invitation today? And come share with the person, the persons here at the front, and just say, this is what I want to say back to Jesus, and let them pray with you. respond to him this morning, let me ask you to stand. Come forward as we sing.